All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of SaberSims DFS Office Hours. Today is Monday, December 1st of 2025. Looking ahead here, we have a Monday night football clash between the Giants and the Patriots over in the NBA streets. We have a 6-game main slate there, and then we also have a 5-game NHL slate. So should be a fun day of DFS. Those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS related questions, get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel and our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual support channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, so you can tune in any one of those days to get your questions answered. All right, we are back after a little bit of a break for the holiday. Haven't had office hours since last Wednesday, so appreciate all of you who have not forgot about me and are tuning in to the show today. Plenty of questions queued up with the break, so we are going to get SaberSim pulled up, got the NFL slate pulled up here, and then we are going to jump right into questions. All right, first one of the day. Is there a high-level explanation of how SaberSim generates ownership-based model that regresses to market? I want to be careful about double counting or undercounting when making adjustments. All right, good question. So, kind of two different things you need to know. Number one is all of our ownership is done in-house. We effectively run builds at very high sim diversities, and we have some kind of parameters that go into the builds that effectively generate exposures, and the exposures become the ownership projections, right? So like when you come in here and you say like, hey, you know, Drake May, 21% owned, right? What that means is that in our ownership builds, you can think of them as, we had an exposure to Drake May of 21.5% in the captain. Now, the second thing you need to know is that this will change. I talk about, you know, kind of settings, parameters that we're doing, right, with these ownership high sim diversity builds. Well, the second thing that's really important to know is that, especially like on the ultimate subscription, right? We have all these different buckets of ownership. What these are a result of back testing contests that we've done. We back tested basically like most of the contests in the DFS lobby, effectively like everything that you see in the contest tab, as far as like all these contests listed, right? If we hop over, all these contests you see, mostly GPPs, some satellites, some multipliers. We've back tested those contests and we've effectively learned which contests play closer together as far as ownership goes. Like, hey, the ownership in the $15 150 max is actually really similar to the ownership in the $9 150 max, right? And so we started grouping contests together. So they're effectively grouped based on stakes. So low stakes is under $4. Flagship is like $4 to $20, or I think $4 to $30 actually. Medium stakes is $30 to $100, and then high stakes is anything over $100. So we found that contests based on stakes have some similarities within those ranges. And then we also learned that contests of certain entry size also have similarities. Single entries play closer together than a single entry versus a 20 max. 20 maxes versus 150 maxes play a little bit different. So we effectively created all these different groups to kind of capture contests within a certain ownership kind of a spectrum, kind of range of outcomes, right? So we understand that, hey, you know, your $100 SPY, which is like $100 single entry, plays a lot different than the $12 single entry, which is like the flagship single entry. So stakes and entry limit all kind of get baked in here. But there's a lot of contest back testing that goes into our ownership projections as well. All right, next question. I've been following a 5% of bankroll max for each slate I play. I played the classic NFL slate today as well as the NFL showdowns and got absolutely murdered. Got me thinking, should I be thinking about this in terms of 5% max play on a projection set instead of slate? Many of the lineups across these slates are related because of the projection slash assumptions for the players and games are largely the same. Example, if a player who the model likes has a goose egg day, I have exposure to that missed projection across multiple slates, the classic and showdown. Wondering if I can, how I can better manage this risk. Okay, good question. So I would definitely recommend against doing 5% per slate. The reason for that is that there are probably 20 unique slates on an NFL Sunday, and you could like absolutely end up in a situation where all of your bankroll is in play. So if you look at like NFL for Sunday, all the slates starting on this day, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Oops, didn't mean to click on one. But we were on 12. We were on Minnesota, Seattle. Where were we? Okay, let's start over. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. So there's effectively 17 slates that start on Sunday, right? Well, you're at, 85% of your bankroll in play? That's not a situation you probably want to find yourself in. I would definitely think about this closer to what you were describing afterwards, where either like 5% max, or even if you want to push it a little bit, like 10% max, because some of these are going to be correlated, right? Like, okay, the Rams Carolina game is on the main slate. It's on the early only. It's on the Sunday to Monday, and it is a showdown, right? Now that's 4 out of 17 that this game falls across. So there's also 13 other slates where this game doesn't matter, but it still takes up, a portion. It's almost 25%, right? If it's on, I think 4 out of 16 would be 25%. So it's on somewhere about 20% of the slates that you're going to play in a day. So you do want to be careful. I think that's why I think like it might be okay to creep up to like closer to like 10%. It's like, well, one game is on, approximately 20 to 25%. Of my slates that day. That means it's not on, 75 to 80% of the others. Well, that's true, right? So if you want to, go a little bit higher on like the bankroll max per day, I could understand that. But playing 85% is definitely like way too high. So I would try and lower that closer to like 5 to 10%. And I think you were kind of already on that path. So I would continue down that direction there and lower overall percentage. All right. Next question. Hi, new to Ultimate. Can you please show how to do a template where I can get rid of negative Saber scores in my lineups? I recall one with value greater than one. Not sure how to do it. Thank you. Okay, great. So the good thing with Ultimate is that you, first off, right? So if you're coming from Starter uses Saber score in the portfolio calculation. That is completely true. Now, Ultimate does not do that. Okay. So portfolio uses Saber score. Portfolio Plus, which is what you have on Ultimate, uses the exact contest's ROI for the contest that you're playing. So effectively, the ROI portfolio sorting is better than the Saber score sorting. Now you need to be on Ultimate to get access to those ROIs. So you don't need to worry about Saber score on Ultimate. And the second thing is that on Ultimate, Saber Sim is not going to use negative ROI lineups when we solve your portfolio. Okay. So also something else you don't need to worry about. However, I will still show you how to set up this filter. So let's just like turn on a contest sim. We'll go back to our build. And we're just going to build 1,500 lineups, make a couple quick changes. All right, so we're kicking off this build, going to generate some lineups. Lineups are just about done. All right. Contest sim is running. All right. Contest sim is finished here. So the most important thing is that, especially if you're using one group per contest, right? What you want to do is you want to set the filter on the group level, right? So there's like the pool level, the group level. Here you want to go to the lineup filter. I would just name it. That way you can reuse it pretty easily. ROI. To use contest sims, target ROI greater than zero. Okay, what this is going to do is it's going to look at the contest that is assigned to this group, and it's going to use those specific ROI results and say, hey, for this contest, we want to filter out lineups that have a negative ROI. So just make sure you do it on the group level. Make sure you have contest assigned. If you're using a template, it'll auto assign it for you. I don't have an entry file uploaded, which is why I don't see it. But that is effectively how you do what you're describing. All right, next question. Just a question about contest selection. Is it better to max out the $1.20 or get my 40 lineups in the 50 cent 150 max? My thought, just being more lineups gives you more chances of getting that first place. Or would you rather have 110 lineups more than you give them that much leverage over you? Okay, good question. So you don't want to be concerned about having less lineups than another user. So effectively, by only entering 40 lineups, what you're doing is you're saying, hey, I'm only going to enter my number one lineup through my 40th best lineup, right? In theory, you put your best lineup and then your second best and third best, right? You're saying, hey, I'm only going to put my 40 best lineups and I'm not going to put my 41 through 150th best lineups, right? I'm just going to leave those out this time. That is a totally okay approach to do. Now, the important thing to consider here, in my opinion, is what I would do is I would go to the contest tab. I would sort this table by effective entrance. Okay, this means like how many unique users it takes to max out this contest. So the first down, right, $1.20 max, takes over 4,000 unique persons to max it out. The mini max here takes 1,268 unique persons. So about 3,000 less people who are maxing this contest out. Well, the fact is there's only so many good players in the DFS lobby. The higher the effective entrance, the more likely it is that there are worse lineups in your contest. And that is good, right? We want to play lineups where our opponents are playing worse lineups because it makes it more likely that our lineups are going to beat theirs. So the higher the effective entrance, generally the softer the contest. You can check flashback ROIs. I've done so, and that seems to hold true. So I would, in this case, recommend playing the first down, the $1.20 max, over the mini max in this scenario. But very good question. All right, another question is, for someone using the starter plan, what's the best way to build three maxes and singles? Because ideally I have no dupes of my own lineups for the night, but also don't have to get so away from chalk necessarily, because much fewer lineups and usually don't have to be almost optimal to win. All right, good question. So we generally recommend building all of your lineups together in one build. And we also recommend leaving on this avoid duplicates across lineup groups toggle on. What this means is that this toggle will ensure that you get a unique lineup for each entry that you have so you don't dupe yourself. The reason that we recommend keeping it all together in one build is that, you know, we've back tested a lot of contests and we've learned more that the scores that you're going to need to achieve generally are more related to the number of games on the slate rather than the specific contest that you're playing. And this could vary at the extremes, right? If you're only playing 100 mans or something like that, right, where the number of players is very, very small, then that could not be true. But even in, you know, like we look at these, I saw that the $5 single entry had, you know, the highest effective entrance for tonight, right? $5 single has 14,000 effective entrance, right? Like that's a lot of unique users. You know, the $1, the daily dollar has a lot. The $3 single entry has a lot, right? Like you're going to need similar type of lineups in these higher entrance single entries as you might need in, you know, you can just like look for contests of similar size. There's like a $4 five max, you know, probably would play similar. $2 20 max would probably play similar, if not softer, right? This $1 five max, right? So we kind of don't recommend doing different things kind of for that reason. Now, if you want, if you're like, hey, I am only playing 100 mans or something like that, okay, then I think what you can probably do is run a separate build and you could probably experiment with lowering sim diversity. I would just start with like one tick down, go from 10 to 9, maybe 8. I don't think you need to go way down to like 5 or 4 or 3, but I think, you know, sim diversity controls the upside in your lineups. If you're saying specifically, hey, I'm playing a contest where I think I need much less upside and I can play a little bit safer, I think it is okay to lower sim diversity. So if you want to group those out into a separate build, lower sim diversity a little bit, that is totally okay. All right, next question. What will be the approach when using late swap being either ahead or behind the live ROI respectively? Also, I saw under late swap Q&A reference to the delta exposure. How does that apply to my prior question? Thanks. Okay, so delta exposure specifically, all it is doing, it's showing you what your exposure was before the late swap versus what it is now. So let's say you had 40% of a player before late swap, and then you run your late swap and now you have 50% of that player. Delta exposure is going to read 10%. It's going to say, hey, you now have 10% more of this player than you did previously. So it's kind of works like leverage. It's just a formula. You know, leverage is exposure minus ownership. Delta exposure is pre-slate exposure minus current slash late swap exposure. It's just kind of a descriptive column to kind of give you some insight into what is changing in your late swap. Now, as far as the live ROIs go and things like that. So while a slate is in progress, in case you guys didn't know, you could probably look at this better on like an NBA slate for tonight, for instance. So when the games are playing, you can go over to a build and you can go to the games tab and there is going to be a new column that appears called the game situation. And it'll basically tell you at what point our live sims are at in this game. So we're never going to be like perfectly live. We're always going to trail behind slightly. So you might look at ESPN and you might see that the game is in the third quarter and there's 5 minutes left, right? And then you come into SaberSim and you're going to see, hey, I look, it's the third quarter, but SaberSim is at 8 minutes left in the third quarter, right? That is effectively the last time we ran the live sim. That is the last time that we are up to date to that point, right? So it's never going to be perfect. You know, you're always going to be a little bit behind, but that's okay, right? You're taking into account the latest and greatest information available to you at that moment. Another good thing to think about, right? Let's say that, you know, there's three games at lock. Okay, the three games start, and maybe I want to run a late swap before the next set of games start. Right? It looks like there's three games, 30-minute break, three games. So going to be a pretty short late swap window here. Well, I'm going to make this up because this never happens, but I'm just going to make it up. Let's assume all of the lineups are out at slate lock, right? You can run your late swap right after the first game start. Okay, first game start, I'm going to run, it's 4 o'clock West Coast time. So at 4:02, I'm going to run my late swap. Now let's say I want to wait and let the games play out a little bit and do one final swap. I do not need to rebuild my lineups, okay? You never need to rebuild because let's assume projections haven't changed and all I'm trying to do is take into account the live data, right? If projections haven't changed from the games that haven't started, there is no reason to rebuild. All I need to do is resim. I am resimming to take into account the current game information. Regardless of what's happening in the game, those players cannot be swapped in or out. So that's why rebuilding doesn't matter. What resimming does is it says, hey, these are the new current live projections. Take that into account in the contest sim and then give me the new best lineups with the highest ROIs. So just know that late swapping goes with projections and then contest sims go with the live sim ROI. So just recontest simming can take that information into account for you. You save time by not needing to rebuild. All right, next question. In NFL main slate, how do I filter out tight end in the flex position if we signed up for the Black Friday special? Where is the 4-day training begin or recording video can be located? Okay, I believe you should expect some communication from our team in regards to the 4-day training. We will make sure we communicate with everybody. I don't believe that's set up quite yet. So our team will be in communication about that. Now, as far as filtering out tight ends go, if we go back to the main slate from yesterday, back to main. All right, so the way you would filter out tight ends from the flex is you have to go to the flex, okay? Now, what I would do, go to position, right-click on the column. What you want to do is you only want to view the position that you want to exclude. So here I'm only going to look at tight ends. I'm effectively unchecking running back and receivers. So now that I'm only viewing tight ends, I can use this mass uncheck box in the upper left. I go back to position. I reselect all. And now the tight ends are unchecked here. So no tight ends in the flex. There is another way of doing this. You can just go to rules. You can go to add new rule, and then you can say use no more than one tight end and only leave tight end checked. This will put a tight end in your tight end spot and then basically make it so a tight end cannot go into your flex. So this is also another option. All right, next question. More of a theory question, but is there anything in NBA in terms of correlation we should be more aware of? For example, in NFL, you typically stack quarterback and receivers as they are highly correlated. Good question. So you can see these correlation values in case you're not aware by like clicking on a player, right? Like I say, I click on Jaxon Smith-Njigba, right? Well, if I look at his correlation to Darnold, it's 0.48, right? Really, really high. If I go back to NBA and I'm going back to the slate today, and let's just say I click on, you know, highest projected player. Looks like it's Giannis. His highest correlation to any one player is 0.11. And this actually happens to be to the opposing team, right? This is kind of the situation where the game's a little bit back and forth. Maybe the pace picks up. Washington is scoring. So Giannis needs to stay in the game and score. It's not a blowout, right? He's correlated to the starters. So correlations, one, aren't as high. And then two, they're also not as correlated to your own teammates. In fact, sometimes you're less correlated. You have negative correlation to your own teammates, right? A lot of these players are bench players, which makes sense because if it were a blowout, Giannis would be sitting. These other players would be playing. So when he's in the game, these other players probably are not. So overall, correlations tend to be lower, but there aren't as kind of strong correlation kind of dynamics in NBA as sports like NFL, MLB, or even hockey. And then this is, you can also see this by the correlation slider being a lot lower by default. If we were back on the main slate for NFL yesterday, correlation is up at like 6. It's a high value. We understand it's really important, and there's a lot of correlation. On NBA, we have small correlation. We account for it slightly, but not too much, at a 1 low value here for like this 6-game slate today. So the sliders will kind of tell you how important correlation is one way or another, so you can be aware of that. All right. We are all caught up with questions here. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.